if you remember, in following through this story, we know that he's going back here to claim his birthright. His father's old. Isaac's getting older, and is going to pass away and not too much further into the story. We won't see that today, but in the near future we'll see that. Jacob has gathered a family, fairly large family. He's got 12 children now. He'll have one more in another few chapters, and we'll get to that when we can. But he's got four wives, two sisters, Leah and Rachel, and then he's got the two maidservants that his wives talked him into marrying to have more children with. He just had his confrontation with his father-in-law, Laban, as he was leaving. Or actually, after he had left, he snuck out and hurt Laban's feelings. And they make up, sort of. Laban's big thing is he didn't get to say goodbye to his daughters and his grandchildren. Or at least that's his excuse. I think it was more involved than that. But anyway, he gets to do that. That's what we saw in the last verse of the last chapter. And so Jacob and his family are free to go. They're heading back. They've but we get into chapter 32, and Jacob knows at some point he's got to deal with his brother Esau, his older brother, the one who he stole the birthright from. We say stole, but we also know that that was the Lord's will. The Lord had a purpose in that, and Jacob is the promised son of Isaac, that the seed of Israel is going to come from. So now we're going to go through and we're going to look at Jacob and his journey back. We start with his journey back. It doesn't end in this chapter. It'll go on for a few chapters, but it begins here. Verse 1, and Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. And when Jacob saw them, he said, "This is God's host." And he called the name of that place Mahanaim. So God has sent some angels to protect him on his journey. Or that's what it appears that they're for. They're there for. And Jacob sees them. You know, today we don't see, unless they appear in human form, and I don't believe oftentimes when that happens, we don't know it at the time. It may be later that we realize, hey, that possibly could have been the Lord's angels. That happens. But Jacob recognized them. He saw them. He said, "This is God's host." And you notice, he says, it's in verse 1, it says, and the angels of the Lord met him. We don't know how many there were. He says a host. A host normally means a lot, a big number. Could be hundreds of thousands. We don't know. But he recognizes them. He sees them. And praises God for it. God's sent these angels to protect him on his way back. Remember, in a normal journey, that normal circumstances, this journey will be a 17-day journey. But he's got a family. He's got all kinds of servants. He's got all kinds of animals with him. It's going to take longer than that. And it's not friendly territory for him or for anybody of God's people. This is a wicked place that he's going to be traveling through. And so the Lord purposely sends angels to protect him and his family. And so in verse 3, he says, and Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau, his brother, unto the land of Seir, the country of Edom. If you remember the story about Esau is the father of the Edomites. another one of those countries that we have seen through from Abraham, or well, actually we see it all the way back with Noah and his sons and their descendants. You see these names of these men's descendants, and you begin to recognize that, hey, these people caused Israel problems for years, for generations throughout the scriptures, and some even still today. A lot of these, we've talked about this before too, a lot of these different nations, God's already taken care of. In Jeremiah's day, and then in the times of Nebuchadnezzar, when he came and overthrew Israel in Judah, Nebuchadnezzar didn't stop there. He went around and wiped out all the neighbors around Israel, and many of those nations never recovered. They never came back. They were gone forever. We see evidences of them in archaeology, but that's about it. I think a good example for what's going on in the world today, the ones that call themselves the Palestinians, they claim to trace their roots back to the Philistines. That's not true. The Philistines were not nomads. They settled in Israel, but the Palestinians, that group, is actually a mixed group of a bunch of different tribes. And they've always been nomads. They've never settled anywhere until now, and it's only because their plan is to destroy the Israel that's there now. So be careful, you know, when you hear these things on the news. The Palestinians are not the good guys, okay? Israel's not perfect, don't get me wrong, but the Palestinians are there for a reason. They're there to torment Israel. We'll see how things go over the next few days, weeks, months, however long this war this time lasts. There's been multiple wars among the two over the years, but and I suspect if they haven't started already, which I think they have, I think I've seen a few bits and pieces here and there on social media. You get these guys that are so-called, they're self-called prophets, end-time prophets, and they're preaching that this is the beginning of the end. It may not be. We don't know. We don't know when the Lord's coming back. He told us that. He told us you're not going to know. So why guess? And as members of one of the Lord's churches, we're not concerned about when the Antichrist comes back, because we're not going to be here. We're concerned about when the Lord comes back, and that's it. Now, verse 4, and he commanded them, saying, thus shall ye speak unto my lord Esau. Thy servant Jacob saith thus, I have sojourned with Laban and stayed there until now. So, it appears as though Jacob's family, they knew he went to see Laban. That's where Isaac and Rebekah sent him. But it appears as though they hadn't heard from him. They don't know if he's dead or alive or what. He sends a message back to his brother Esau through some servants that this is where I've been. In this case, and with everything that's happened, Esau, you got to think that he's in his mind, he's thinking, my brother's gone for good. I'm going to get my inheritance back. And that's very possible. That's how it would have worked if it had happened, if Jacob had not come back, if he had been killed, or if he had decided not to come back to claim his birthright. It would have defaulted to Esau. And I have oxen and asses, flocks and men servants and woman servants, and I have sent to tell my lord that I may find grace in thy sight. Now Jacob here is bowing down to Esau, it appears. He refers to him as my lord. That's a term of respect for one. It's also a term of humbleness. It can be a term of humbleness. It can also be that he knows that he's afraid of Jacob. I mean, he's afraid of Esau. Jacob is afraid of Esau. And so he's trying to be diplomatic here and show that he respects his brother. He's scared of him. He doesn't want to admit that he's scared of him, but that's what he's showing here. You're seeing the fear of Jacob with Esau here. And the messengers returned to Jacob, saying, "We came to thy brother Esau, and also he cometh to meet thee, and 400 men with him." Now, we don't know how many men Jacob had with him. We just know he had a bunch of servants. That's all we know. Esau is bringing 400 men with him. Sounds like a small army. So, with this message, Jacob has a right to be scared, don't he? Especially since Jacob is, remember, Jacob's a mama's boy. He's not a fighter. Esau was. Esau was the hunter and the fisherman and the manly man, if you want to call him that. Not Jacob. And then it says, and Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. And he divided the people that was with him and the flocks and the herds and the camels into two bands. And said, if Esau come to the one company and smite it, then the other company that which is left shall escape. So he split his force. Popular military move. So he's not that stupid. You know, he's figured this out. I'll split my people and my animals. And if Esau destroys one, the other one will get away. And I'll still have something to start over with when I get back home. And Jacob, and remember, Esau, back further back, a few chapters back, Esau had promised to kill Jacob. That's how angry he was with him. He let him know that if we meet up again, I'm going to kill you. So he has a right to fear his brother. In verse 9, and Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham, and God of my father Isaac, the Lord which saidest unto me, return unto thy country and to thy kindred, and I will deal well with thee. I am not worthy of the least of all the mercies and of all the truth which thou hast showed unto thy servant. For with my staff I passed over this Jordan, and now I am become two bands. Deliver me, I pray thee, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he will come and smite me and the mother with the children. And thou saidest, I will surely do thee good and make thy seed as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. So he prays to God, which he should have. Probably should have done this before he split his force, but he prays to God before his brother gets there for protection from his brother. But also notice that Jacob understands God's future for him and for his seed. So what purpose has he got to be afraid? If he knows that God has made a vow and made a promise that he's going to be the father of a large nation, like God told Abraham and Isaac, and Isaac has passed that down to Jacob, why is he afraid of his brother? He shouldn't be. And isn't that how we oftentimes are? God makes us promises. He tells us that not to fear anybody, not to fear anything in this life. Just like we mentioned earlier about things going on over in Israel. We got no need to fear any of that. Yet, I'll guarantee you, come tomorrow morning, the stock market's probably going to crash. Or it's going to be affected for something that has nothing to do with us. But that's how man is. Something happens on the other side of the world and he thinks, oh no, things are getting bad. Well, no, they're not. Not necessarily. They may get bad, and it may get bad soon, but as of right now, today, it's not bad. We have nothing to worry about. And even if it does get bad, as God's people, we've got nothing to fear. That over there Yeah, it's. I think it's good for us to understand the prophecy of things that's going to happen over there. But as far as our relationship with the Lord, it doesn't change anything. As far as when the Lord comes back for us, it's not going to change that. It's not going to cause it to happen any sooner. It's not going to have, not going to cause Him to wait. He's got His time picked out, and that's when He'll come. But Jacob, through all this, he prays to God, like I said, as he should have. And we see his faithfulness to God here in this prayer. And we also see that he is afraid, and that's the reason he prays to God. And oftentimes we do. When we're worried about something, we go to God in prayer, and we should. It's what he instructs us to do. But in this case, especially, other than the fact that because he's already got children and his seed is already established, the worst thing that Esau could do to Jacob right now is kill Jacob himself. Because the promise has already been, in this case, the promise has already been fulfilled that Jacob has already got seed and his seed is going to keep producing seed. Jacob is worried more about his own self, I think. He's worried for his own skin and not that of his, necessarily of his family, because he knows the promise of God. Verse 13, and he lodged there that same night and took of that which came to his hand a present for Esau, his brother. 200 she-goats and 20 he-goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 milch camels, or colts, that's camels that are nursing, 40 kine with 10 bulls, and kine is another word for cattle, 20 she-asses and 10 foals, and he delivered them into the hand of his servants, every drove by themselves, and said unto his servants, pass over before me, and put a space betwixt drove and drove. So put a distance between the two groups. You take this group and y'all go over there. Me and this group are going to stay behind. And notice he sends out his servants to face his brother. He doesn't go out himself. That shows his fear of his brother. And he commanded the foremost, the one out in the front, saying, when Esau my brother meeteth thee, and askest thee, saying, whose art thou, and whither goest thou, and whose are these before thee? Then thou shalt say, they be thy servant Jacob's. It is a present sent unto my lord Esau, and behold, also he is behind us. And so commanded he the second, and the third, and all that followed the droves, saying, on this manner shall he speak unto Esau when he find him. Now we don't know how many different droves he has here. We know that he sends out multiple servants. Each servant has a drove or a flock, whatever you want to call it, flock or a herd. And so they're going to go out in waves. So the first one, when he meets Esau, he's supposed to say what he's been commanded to tell Esau, who he is, who his master is, and that all these animals are Esau's, a present for Esau it's from his brother, but he doesn't say his brother. He said from your servant. You see, Jacob is so scared of Esau, he's trying to play the nice guy in this. He's trying to play it down he's bowing down to him is what he's doing. And he shouldn't be. Remember, Jacob is the promised son, not Esau. It should be the other way around. And so he tells each servant to do the same thing all the way down the line. As each wave comes up, of each flock or whatever comes up there to Esau, they're just supposed to bow down to him and then hand over everything as a present to him. In verse 20, and say ye moreover, behold, thy servant Jacob is behind us, for he said, I will appease him with the present that goeth before me, and afterward I will see his face, peradventure he will accept of me. So his thinking is, if I need to, I'll give him all these presents, and it'll calm him down, calm down his anger against me, and we can sit and talk peaceably. So went the present over before him, and himself lodged that night in the company, and he rose up that night and took his two wives and his two woman servants and his 11 sons and passed over the ford Jabbok, and he took them and sent them over the brook and sent over that he had. So the second group, with his wives and his kids, he sends them across the brook, across the stream or whatever, the river, whatever this was, and told them, y'all stay back here, well, and let's just see what happens with the other bunch. Now, Jacob, he decides he wants to be left alone. Left alone to meditate, to pray with the Lord. And we see, and it says, and Jacob was left alone, and there wrestled a man with him until the break of day. There's all kinds of stories on this, okay? Some say it was an angel. Some say it was an actual man. As we read through this, and we read Jacob's words later in the chapter, it appears as though it's the Lord himself, because he says he met with the face of God. Go meet God face to face, is what he says. So it appears that the Lord himself came in the image of a man and wrestled with Jacob. And it says, until the breaking of day, from bedtime till the morning. And when he saw that he prevailed not against him, he touched the hollow of his thigh, and the hollow of Jacob's thigh was out of joint as he wrestled with him. So Jacob's hard-headed. He's not going to give up. The Lord's wrestling with him all night, and Jacob's just... And some say that maybe this is... Some try to put this in a spiritual manner where he struggled with him in the spirit, and not. But he tells us there in verse 24, he wrestled a man. So it was a physical wrestling. You know, it was about spiritual matters, I believe. But this man touches him in the thigh, and from what I'm understanding, it's in the groin area, the hollow of the thigh, pops his hip out of joint, basically, is what it does. And we'll see later, but Jacob is crippled for life because of this. He suffers with this the rest of his life. The Lord doesn't put it back in. And he said, let me go, for the day breaketh. And this is the man speaking that he's wrestling with. And he said, I will not let thee go, except thou bless me. Now, again, if this is not the Lord, why would Jacob ask him to bless him? The only other man that he's ever asked to bless him was his father, Isaac. And that was to deal with his birthright. In this case, you know, we know it's not Esau, for sure, because he's not mentioned here. But he asked this man to bless him. And then we get into verse 27, and he says, and he said unto him, what is thy name? And he said, Jacob. Now, if this is the Lord already knows his name. But he asked him. And he said, thy name shall be called no more Jacob, but Israel, for as a prince hast thou power with God and with men, but hast prevailed. There's only one way he could have had his name changed, and that was by God, by the Lord himself. His name is changed from Jacob to Israel. So now we see the name of the nation that's going to come out of Jacob. This is they're going to be named for Jacob's new name, Israel. And Jacob asked him and said, tell me, I pray thee, thy name. And he said, wherefore is it that thou Dost ask after my name? And he blessed him there. Notice the Lord never, or this man never, replies to his question, who he is. But watch this in the next verse. And Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, for I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved. So that tells us that Jacob understood that this was God himself, this man that he just wrestled. It was God in human form. And we know if you read throughout the, especially through Genesis, you see several places where the Lord appeared. Well, he did to Abraham and Sarah. Remember the three men that came to the tent and talked with them? That was God in human form. So that's happened before. It's not nothing new in their day. This place Peniel always fascinated me, because where I lived in Texas, not too far from where I lived, there was a town. It was a community now. It used to be a town there with the same name. And when I was younger and first had internet, I looked it up because I knew this story here with this name. That town was originally started by the Assemblies of God. So they and they had a, at one time had a university there. It's not there anymore, but it's a name that religious people have clung to for whatever reason. And of course, with them being a Pentecostal group, they tend to spiritualize a lot of things. And so you hear, if you've ever been around those types of people, oftentimes they'll talk about wrestling with God. We don't wrestle with God today unless it's in a spiritual matter or in our minds, and then it's not in the same way. It's totally different. It's not physical. This was a physical wrestling with two men, and one of the men was the Lord himself. And as he passed over Peniel, and this is the same name. I don't know why they spelled it different, but it's the same name. The sun rose up upon him, and he halted upon his thigh. In other words, he limped. He's got a limp now. Therefore, the children of Israel, eat not of the sinew which shrank, which is upon the hollow of the thigh, unto this day, because he touched the hollow of Jacob's thigh and the sinew that shrank. So we see, here's another tradition of the Jews, and here's the reason for it. They, even to this day, they don't eat that part of the meat of an animal because of this story. Now, next time, Jacob and Esau are going to meet up again. And we'll get more into the story of Jacob and his family heading back home to Canaan. They're close, but not there yet. So we're going to stop there for this morning.